Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamant.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Robert?
Today, Russell, I am feeling like I'm feeling. And when I say that, I mean like deep feels, kind of all the feels, feeling super alive. And that is because today's guest's work can make a universe out of one single brushstroke. There is such power in her work, and really at its essence, it, for me, I've kind of interpreted it as feeling, kind of deep emotion and psychological interior and kind of experience of everyday life and reality. And it's quite a powerful thing to think about that within the history of painting. And today's guest is a very singular voice and someone who is relating to the history of art, but somehow has created a whole new language over the past 6 decades. That's right, 6 decades, and is based in Washington, D.C., and has created some incredible bodies of work, including a really seminal series called M Street, which is going to be exhibited in London. And it's actually today's guest's first ever UK solo exhibition at Edel Asante Gallery in October. And we are super proud and very, very overexcited to be talking to the artist herself. So we would like to welcome to Talk Art, Sylvia Snowden.
Hi, Sylvia.
Well, hello. How are you again? Fine, thank you.
We're great. It's just such an honour to talk to you, Sylvia. So as Rob said, you're based in Washington, D.C. Is that where we speak to you today?
Yes. I have my studio in my home, and that's where you're calling me.
Amazing. And what is it like to have your studio and your home in the same place?
Oh, it's wonderful for me in the sense that I don't have to get into a car and go to another place when I feel like painting. All I have to do is to go to other rooms and paint.
How many rooms do you paint in?
It's very convenient for me. I've painted in every room in this house. This house is a very large house for city homes, and I've painted in every room in this house, with the exception of the kitchen and the bathroom. And there are 4 stories in this house. And there are about 16 rooms in this house. And most of the house now, where I don't paint, is used for storage.
Right. And you've lived in this house for many years? This has been somewhere where you've been able to really
settle?
Yes,
I've lived in this house. Sure, I've lived here for, I didn't mean to cut you off. I've lived here since 1976.
Wow.
That's so cool.
And do you, when you paint in all the different rooms, do you feel like each room has a different energy that you can bring into your work?
No, I bring the energy into the room. The room doesn't give it back to me.
I love that. So as Rob was talking about in the in the intro, he says he has a lot of feelings, and you've described your work as painting feelings. Is that something we can talk about?
Sure, but you know, I paint pictures. I don't talk, but I'm gonna make an effort. And I appreciate you asking me these questions. But what happens is that an idea comes into my head, goes through my head to my heart and out through my arm, and that makes the stroke. That governs the stroke. So it's not like an emotional outburst. It's a combination of the intellect and the emotion. It's not just one or the other. Even though my style of painting is often referred to as emotional, it's passionate.
Right. And do you know when you start a painting now? Because people coming to your work will obviously see the figure present. Do you know when you start a work what the work is going to be? Or as you're saying now, there's this intuition and this instinct that you have that you're saying that the brushstroke comes out through the arm. Is that something you just trust to tell you what the painting is?
Well, the thing about it is that I'm 81. I've been painting for a very long time, a very long time. So when I paint, it's something that I have thought about, something that I have felt. Was that your question?
Yes. I mean, yes, but this is obviously a lifelong thing. As you know, over six decades you've been painting. So I guess, yeah, this thing is something that your line is something that you are in complete command of.
Yes. Yes, I've done it so for such a long time. I understand paint and me. I understand it. It's not something that I'm fumbling through trying to find myself. I have found myself and my mode of expression and my style. My style of expression comes from my personality.
When did you settle on that style, do you think? Look, if you go back, when did you feel like this is my style and this
is
my personality?
It's not a point of set. I keep interrupting you. I'm so sorry.
You're okay.
It's not a point of settling on it. It's not a point of settling on. This is something that's developed. You know, it's developed. And as I said, I've been playing for a long time. And I'm governed a lot by a passion for paint, a passion for color.
I know that you were born in 1942 in Raleigh, North Carolina. And if you look back to your childhood growing up, do you remember the first time you thought, like, I really love painting or I really love the texture of paint?
No, what I do remember is the first time when I was about 4 years old painting. I remember that. My parents, particularly my mother, was interested in color, interested in art, and my brother and I painted with watercolors. Now, I remember that, painting outside on the trees. I remember that, you know, and I've been painting ever since. Of course, not every day. Now I paint every day.
For sure. And I know that your mother, Jessie Burns Snowden, was a professor of English literature, and she taught
yes.
at a university and, you know, was highly successful in her own right. And did she bring a lot of sort of passion and influences, you know, aside from like books and things? But do you think, where some of your art interest sort of began?
I think my interest in color came directly from her. And I had very supportive parents. My father, Dr. George W. Snowden, and my mother, Jessie Burns Snowden, were extremely supportive of me. And I could not be the painter I am without them. They bought my paint. They did everything for me. I mean, everything. And they fostered everything. They encouraged me.
What was it like for them then, knowing that, you know, when you started a career and you were becoming successful as an artist? I mean, that must have been incredibly proud for them.
Well, we never discussed that. We never discussed, well, Sylvia, I'm proud of you. Well, do you know what you need? I like this. I'm glad you're making this particular effort, you know, and you're being accepted this way or here. But it wasn't You know, it wasn't, they didn't give me a little pep talk, if that's what you mean. My father did say when I was in the 11th grade, he said we wanted to have a little chat. And I said, okay, Daddy. And so he said, well, what do you want to do when you go to Howard University? What do you want to major in? So I told him art. He says, oh, my goodness, I don't know. I don't know how much money you're going to make with that. But we're with you. And they were with me all the time until they died. They were with me. I'm doing a series now dedicated to my father. It's called the G series. My father's first name, as I said, was George. And this is a G series. And this is a non-figurative series. I paint in a series just like people paint, like people write in a paragraph. There's a thought, and then, or let's say, a book of short stories. And there's each chapter represents a painting. And when I have said all that I can say in paint about the subject matter, then it's complete.
Wow. So a lot of bodies of work that you've stayed in, do you feel they are finite now then? When you felt like you've come to a natural conclusion with certain themes?
I have said what I could say, the best way I could say it in paint at the time, and that's the end of that thought.
Wow. I'd like to go back to how inspiring your mother was, because you were saying about how a lot of the work, you know, was inspired by her, and especially the color palette. And I think you said because your mother always wore bright colors, that color palette has entered the work and stayed there.
Yes. We lived in a house that had a lot of prints of outstanding artists. And my mother, we had a lot of color in the house, and she wore color. My mother was very much inspirational to me as far as the appreciation of color.
Wow. And also, I guess a celebration of female strength. It feels like there's a real kind of strength that runs through the work.
Well, there's a strong sense of passion that runs through the work. A lot of people use that word about strength in my work. Well, it's direct. I'm direct. You know, it's direct. And it's impasto, it's thick paint.
Yeah, and thinking about that, I know that when you got to Howard University, where you studied under David Driscoll and Lois Malu Jones and James Porter, that was somewhere where your professors kind of began to introduce you to expressionist painting, which, you know, if you think of all those incredible artists, do you remember discovering that kind of era when you were doing your BA?
It was more or less they've let me develop my own style. It wasn't that, well, look at Kokoschka, look at Nova, look at whomever. It wasn't so much that, but we can experience looking at all art. But you develop your own statement, and they encouraged me that way. And I tell you what, you know, I've never been able to talk about my art. When you get a master's degree from Howard, you have to write about your work, and you also have to defend it verbally. And so I told Professor Porter that I just couldn't talk about it. So he says, you're going to have to do that. You won't get a degree. That's part of the degree. And it was very, very difficult. And he told me one thing. He said, you're going to have to learn how to talk about your art because you're going to be asked to talk about it. And you're going to have to learn how to do it. And it still makes me nervous. I've been thinking about this interview since yesterday, hard, thinking about it. And it's a little nervous-wracking for me.
No, you sound great. But why did you find it hard to talk about your work, do you think?
Because I paint, I don't talk. If I want to express myself with verbs, with words, I do it differently. You know, I'd write about it. You know, but I paint about it. I do not use words. Paint is my mode of expression, of my thinking and feeling.
Yeah, it's amazing. Can we talk about the materiality? You mentioned just now a thick impasto. And for people listening who might not know what that is, could you talk about that? But also really curious about the material that you paint on. It's masonite, which is something that is really a beautiful surface to paint on. It'd be really nice to talk about that as well, please.
Well, let me explain. Number one, the impasto just simply means thick paint. That's all it means for our audiences, for our purposes. It simply means thick paint, and my paint is getting thicker. It's almost like a bas-relief sculpture, and a low bas-relief sculpture where the positive space is raised from the surface, from the negative space, and that's what it's like. And I just enjoy the three-dimensionality of that. And what was the second part of the question?
The surfaces that you paint on, especially masonite, which is something that comes up in your work.
Well, the masonite is in this particular series that you see in London. I don't use masonite anymore. I've used masonite because I've done a lot of pen and ink with mixed media.
Yeah, so that was in the 1970s, wasn't it, with the masonite? And it was a series called M Street.
Can we talk about the M Street series where you did use the masonite in the 70s, which is a show that will be coming to London? This is your first UK solo. Congratulations. We're very excited to have you here. What is the M Street series and what can people look forward to discovering with this?
Well, this is the M Street, this particular group of paintings that you see, the M Street on white. Which the figures is just the positive space and all of the negative space is white. And it's a study of the human instinct in people, the human being, the humanness in us. It's not about our position in life or about how much formal education we had or anything. We are all human beings and we have the same type of feelings, though they at times go in one direction or another. But nevertheless, we still have the same type of experiences with our feelings. And that's what I try to paint. I try to paint what we as human beings are about.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of like, I've read it before, actually, that it's like the psychological essence of your subjects, the kind of deliberations, triumphs, and then also like joy and kind of happier times, too.
Well, I don't think I'm not. Well, I have a joy of painting, but I don't know whether my subject matter is expression of joy. That's not an expression of joy. It's an expression of is. And joy, you know, and the way you seem to use it is not something I paint about. The act of painting is joyous for me, but the subject matter, I don't paint joy. I paint us, and we are not all joy all the time, or if ever, after we get through puberty. You understand?
Yeah. So this series as well is taken from real life. Were you sketching or painting? And were these people and the community that you were surrounded by, were they aware that you were an artist and you were making these works?
Yes, they were aware I was an artist. They were aware. I didn't socialize with the adults. I have children, and the adults had children, and my kids played with the children. You know, all the children played together. But no, they. I don't sketch. I paint. Go directly to paint. The when they were aware, when the trucks used to come by and pick up my work, and on the back of each painting is the name of the painting, and then people say, "Oh, there I am," not recognizing, not wanting to recognize what the paint was about, not even asking where, but the name of them on the back of the painting meant so much to me, and I wish I had filmed that because it was, you know, it did me my heart good that I was able to make them feel good too.
So this is why so many titles of your works are people's names. There's like, especially in the late 70s, Beverly Johnson, Alice Shannon, Darlene Shannon, and Nathan Dixon. The titles are the subjects.
Yes, and they are people that I knew.
And they really enjoyed the fact that their name was on a piece of art. Their name, they were recognized within a painting.
Yes,
that's amazing.
They were recognized as a person. They were thought of as a person. Yes. You might have the same feeling if somebody does a painting of you. And you see, you might enjoy that somebody thought enough of you as a person to paint you. It sort of validates your life.
Yeah. Did you feel like it was, you were making a gift for people in some ways by recognizing them?
Heavens no. Heavens no. There's no gift to the people, no. I was just painting. You know, it had nothing to do. I was painting. I wasn't giving them. There wasn't a gift. It had nothing to do with that. This was a means of identification. Okay, so this is what Leroy, whomever. And then I realized, I remember exactly which painting that is. Because I paint a lot and all of the time. And so I have to make sure I understand exactly which painting you're talking about. Because there are many paintings. I've done many. And you have those names because I can remember what the painting was, hopefully.
So when we look at these paintings, these figures, there's something that's very unique to you is that they seem to float in space or in water. They have these contorted bodies, but it's like they're disorientated and they're not spatially placed anywhere. It's really fascinating language that you have.
I'm glad you could read it.
Yeah. Is that something that you... that took a while to come to, and was it quite a thing to allow yourself to let your figures float and be spatially kind of not in an equilibrium, kind of like just free falling?
Well, it's not point. They're not free falling. I understand your point, but they are in space. They are in space so that the viewer, so what that I'm and painting about, you can see them alone without being obstructed with anything else. You can identify with them, hopefully, in some part of your own experience. Your own experience in life can identify with the position of the bodies, the type of the bodies, the way they are, exaggerate the position of the hands. And the floating aspect is that we are not anchored. We are not anchored at all. And that I want to get across that so that we can identify with this.
Yeah, and you mentioned the hands just then. This is something as well that's so unique to you, is that your hands are oversized. They're something that my eyes, always drawn to first within the image is these hands that are kind of really big.
Well, the reason for that is that we express ourselves through verbally. But often we express ourselves through the use of our hands. And often our hands are truer to what we feel and think than what our mouth is. Because it's closer to the use of the hands. That's closer to the mind and the heart than what we think and feel. Than fumbling it through words somebody else has decided what they mean.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So our hands express what we mean.
And if you think about a series like M Street or the current one you're working on right now, the G series, how does it begin? Like, is there a point when you're suddenly like an idea has formed so strongly that you can then freely just
like... It's not a sudden. Nothing with me is sudden with paint. I've been doing it too long, so it has nothing to do with sudden. I think about some experiences, and I think about the closeness of my father And then that's when I decided I was going to paint that. There are other series that I have in the back of my mind. And then when I get to them, you know, I'll paint them. But there's no rush.
And how many works have you made so far in the G series?
I don't count them.
That's amazing. There's an amazing quote that you have as well, which is where you see things in other people that are reflected in me. My painting is me. And it is you as the artist, but also when you're painting the figures all come back and they all belong to you. They are you as well.
I hope so. And I hope they're you too. I'm trying to express our humanness. That's what I'm trying to express. And that, if I express that, then you can identify with it too.
Yeah, so a universality kind of.
Do you think of an audience when you're making work? Are you aware that there will eventually be people looking at these works, or is it that something?
No,
that
no. That's too much clutter. You know, it doesn't. What I have to do for me is to do the best painting I can. Now, what you think about it is up to you. I can't be concerned with what you think about it. I have to be concerned with, am I doing the best I can to relay what I think and feel on the canvas? Not what your reaction is.
Yeah.
But certain audiences, you know what their reaction might be.
Yeah. You've also said that the first painting I ever did was a social statement. That's something I'd love to open up for the audience.
The first painting I did when I was at Howard University was a social statement. That was true. Where are you finding all of these? That's true.
Research.
You know, that's true. The social statement. See, I was brought up and raised in a different environment than a lot of people were, and used to make paintings of social consciousness, and used to paint. And then I didn't realize I was 18 now. I didn't realize that I was doing a painting of a clothesline that's been done forever. You know, I said, oh, look what I've done, you know, to myself. You know, that's been done forever. But at any rate, it's just a social comment. And which when I grew up there, you didn't see clotheslines, you know, but some people, they look out the windows and see them. My parents raised me to be socially aware, to have an appreciation for all people, not to appreciate the rich and powerful, but to have an appreciation for all people as human beings, all people. So, I mean, there's a social consciousness that was taught to me from a very young age. See, I don't look down nor up to people. People are just people. We across the table from one another. That's it. There's no, you know, up nor down.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was one part of your education, if you like, or the kind of early years, which I was really interested in, which was I know that a mentor of yours, E.T.C. White, recommended that you go to Australia, and you ended up going there for a whole year to do a residency in 1975.
Did you know him? Have you ever heard of him?
I hadn't heard of him before this interview, no, but from what I've seen...
He lived in London. He's a very, very world-renowned art historian. Mm-hmm. Whom I became good friends with when I was at Johns Hopkins. He was visiting head of the department, and I had applied for the PhD program there, and that's how I met him. And he and his wife and I became friends and maintained that friendship, and he thought that I should paint. And he had a letter from James Porter recommended me, saying, well, Sylvia's a painter. She's not an art historian. But if she wants to do art history, I recommend her for your program. So John White and his wife came by my house and you know, looked at my family, became almost like a part of my family. His wife became almost like one of my best friends. And he said, you need to get away from here where you don't have to worry about anything. And you go down to University of Sydney, and there you have a nice place to stay. You won't have to pay anything. Have a nice place to stay. You have all your materials. You have your studio, and you can paint when you want to, when and if you want to. You can come home if you want to, or you can stay there. It's up to you. Well, I stayed there. He didn't think I was, because it was all white and I'd be the only black person there. But he didn't think I, but I did, and had fun, enjoyed myself, had quite a social life. You know, I went to a lot of parties. But it was fun, and I did a lot of work, a lot of work there.
And that was 1975.
I'm not good on years. I remember, you know, I always had to call my daughter. I know her birth date, but I always had to say, what year were you born? And I can remember when I delivered her, you know, but I can't, I'm not good on dates. So if that's what you're reading, that's correct.
Have you ever thought that, I know you predominantly work and paint in Washington, but in the times that you painted in, like, I don't know, Skowhegan in Maine, or when you went to Australia, for example, did light ever affect your interpretation or response or use of color? Or do you think it's just something that the actual physical location really doesn't impact even the color choices?
It doesn't impact it at all. For me, it does not.
Interesting.
No. You know, when I was in school at age 18 or 19, I had to learn how to shade, which direction light came from. But, I mean, it has nothing to do with my painting. It has nothing to do with me at all. Light, it has nothing to do with me. I just want to make sure I can see it, that the light's bright enough so I can see the color differentiation, but not, it has nothing to do with me.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Paint by the North Light or whatever they paint by.
What is it like, Sylvia, now knowing that your work is coming to the UK? And how do you feel about these paintings that you made in the late 70s and now kind of being seen in 2023 in London?
Well, I'm fortunate that my paintings are being shown. And I appreciate that.
Yeah, I mean, are you excited about an audience discovering you here? How do you feel like the work...
No, I don't get excited like that. You know, I just want to make, you see, I have to make, I'm going to go there a little early, and I'm glad Charlie Fellows let me do this, asked me to do this, to come there a little early, and to place the paintings where they will be best seen. And I'm glad about that, and I do appreciate that. But it's not, I do appreciate that. He has involved me with a lot of decisions, like you here.
Yes.
How did you get to know my work?
I first saw it at Freeze Masters last year.
Yes, 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 that was it around Freeze.
In October in London.
There was stuff written about it
around Freeze. Franklin Parash Gallery did an installation of a body of work you made. And I think I saw that. And then I started researching you on the internet. And then weirdly, Russell contacted me separately about your work, saying that he loved it and that we should try and find you. Because we often share our enthusiasm almost every day for new people or people we've never heard of. And that's kind of what our friendship is.
And
we both came
is.
To your work in... Yeah, and what the show is, yeah. But that we both came to your work individually and then we kind of had this meeting point. It was a really beautiful thing.
Oh, good. That's good to hear.
Good. Can we talk about, Rob touched on then about you were at Skowhegan teaching. Teaching's been a very important thing for you throughout your whole career.
I didn't teach at Skowhegan. Did not teach at Skowhegan. I was a student. You know, I was still at Howard University. And what they did was to offer scholarships to people. At that time, that was the best summer school, art summer school in the country. And they offered scholarships to certain universities. And Howard University was one. And James A. Porter chose me to go that particular year. And I did go, and I enjoyed myself. I got first place in painting, too, which was nice. And my parents came up. I met a lot of people there, like Ben Sean. And my parents came up to get me. They had to put the paintings on top of the car, and we came back to D.C. But that was good. And the second time I went to Skowhegan, I was there as artist in residence, which I painted. There, but I was never in a teaching position.
But you have taught at like Howard and Cornell and Yale.
I have taught everywhere on the Eastern Seacoast. Yes, I did, and that's because I can't paint and work 40 hours a week. I cannot do that. Just and take care of my kids, work 40 hours a week. Take care of them, you know, my house, and then paint. I don't have any more energy, time, or anything else left. So I've been extremely fortunate that I could get jobs where I would teach, where the workload was 12 hours a week. And I got to the point where I don't like to teach painting. Just because it takes too much energy from me, from my art, from my own art. So I don't like to teach painting. What I do like to teach is like the survey of art history. I've had a lot of art history courses, which was you had to have a minor at Howard University if you were majoring in painting. You had to have a minor in art history. So that's what I have, and one in psychology. But that the art history, I've learned so much about it while I was in Howard that I would teach the year course of the survey of art history from Paleolithic to the 21st century. I enjoyed doing that. You know, showing slides and talking about what the thrust was in this particular way of painting. I enjoyed that, and it didn't take... I memorized it. You know, so I'd go into class, one class, and say, tell me what the last thing it was that I said. And they tell me, and then I just go right on, you know, right on that way. And I enjoy doing that. I enjoy communicating. I enjoy trying to instill an appreciation for Western art into people. And I've taught people from different backgrounds, from people who were not economically fortunate to those who were very economically fortunate. And it's a funny sort of thing, too. It's about the way people think. To me, it's an interesting thing. Interesting for me. People are interesting.
They are. But has teaching, you were saying that you didn't want it to take too much away from your art, but having so many personalities and so many interesting people you're meeting, has that affected the way you approached your own art?
No. It was just what they did was maybe enriched my life that I knew got to know somebody, but it didn't have any effect on my own painting. No, what I do is a singular thing. It's a singular thing. It's not where I have these great influences. The only two influences I've had on my painting were my parents and their support. They were great parents. And the support and guidance of Howard University's Fine Arts Department. Those are the two two aspects of my life that helped me formulate what I do now.
Can we talk about your art heroes, Sylvia? Is it possible to touch on Edvard Munch?
Oh, heroes, that's an odd word, isn't it?
Is
that's
it?
An odd word. I don't have any art heroes. I mean, I don't use that word heroes. I don't know what that word means, really. But there are people whose work I like. And, I like some of Salvador Dali. So you can say what you want to say about his work and about him. But I like some of his work. And you can say what you want to say about his film, but whatever you want to say. You know, but I like some of that. I like some of a lot of different styles of art. You know, I like Carol LaPelle. You know, I like Soutine. Oh, Soutine is just wonderful. But and you know, I like Kokoschka. And most of the expressionist painters I like, whether they're abstract expressionists or German expressionists, either I like the expressionism. I do.
Right, mm-hmm. right. I mean, I love this. I love this expression that you're saying of like, of that your art is really you, and then other people can spot things that they think you might like, but essentially your creativity is from within you, and then as you grow through life, it just evolves.
It is, exactly. The paint is me. The style is me. All of that is me, my personality, what I have experienced. It's all me. What somebody else does over there doesn't mean anything. I can like it. I can appreciate it. I just use Dali and Soutine because they're two extremes in the way they apply paint. Just to say that I have an appreciation for many styles of painting. Many styles. And they all have to be expressionist. But most of them are. But then have to be expressionism.
How long does a painting take for you, Sylvia, when you're working on it?
I don't use, there's no such thing as clock time. A painting is it starts and ends. Now, what the clock says doesn't mean anything. It has a lot, I mean, that has nothing to do with me. I don't paint by clock time. It has nothing to do with me whatsoever. A painting is started, it's an experience, and I'm having it. And when I know that it's, that experience has ended, I stop. It's complete. And it has nothing to do with time. And a lot of it, you know, because my paint's so thick, a lot of it, you know, it takes so much time for it to dry, which is like I'm waiting for a painting that I worked on yesterday hard. To dry enough. I paint on the floor because the paint is so thick that if I paint it on an easel, my paintings are too large to put on an easel, but if I lean them against the wall, see, the paint would just slide down. So I have to paint on the floor. So many paintings that I paint on the floor, I don't see them hanging until they're in a gallery or a museum. I don't see that. Because everything I'm focused is the way I paint is looking directly down on them, not as though they're looking back at me from a standing position.
So you must be really surprised then when you see these paintings.
No, why would I be surprised?
because the position's changed and you're suddenly seeing them from,
no,
you know, a different...
No, they don't change. My position changes, but the painting doesn't change.
Right.
So I don't want one. No. It's not surprised. Well, I see this. It's just another way that I can see it.
If you think of painting as a very solitary act, and I heard a friend of mine, Rebecca Lucy Taylor, who's a singer in England, she said the other day that for her, creativity in her life is almost like when you're born, you're at the bottom of the mountain, and then by the time you die, you're at the top of the mountain, and then all you're doing in life and in creativity is sort of slowly going up that mountain, like alone. Do you think of art as this solitary sort of journey
it
through
is
life?
For me, it is for me. Making art, that's what you're saying. Making art is solitary. I'm not around people. I don't need their approval. I don't need anything from them. They're just a distraction. And I have to think and feel and put down when I'm by myself, not with other people.
Right. And what is your favorite thing about making work, like being a painter? Is there one particular thing?
The act of doing it.
Mm.
Just doing it. You know, while you're in the act of creating it, that is the most exciting part for me.
So it's the doing, not necessarily the end result. It's kind of the purpose of it is the doing.
Yeah, you asked me about, I thought, what was the most exciting thing about painting is doing it. It's not the end result, it's doing it. I don't stand, you know, some people do stand back and they look at their art and they say, oh, and they get all, you know, excited about it. I don't do that. No.
What is the feeling then? What is the feeling you have then when you've finished a painting?
Exuberance. It's an exuberance comes in really when I'm doing it. That's when I feel it. It's not like the end of it. I'm exuberant. It's just the actual doing it. Some people do look at their work and they get exuberant at the end. And look what I've created. I don't go through that at all. It has nothing to do with me and my process.
And are you quite happy then for the work to leave the studio and be acquired by collectors and museums? How do you feel about parting with your work?
You know, I don't have this whole thing about, I can't part with my art. It doesn't have anything to do with me and painting. When I'm finished it, I'm divorced from it. I am so interested in doing the painting itself. You know, when I'm through doing it, then I'm divorced from it. I'm on to the next one. I'm a shy person. And it's not, I can't go up and say, come and look at my work. Come and see this. You know, I can't do that. And that's why I'm where I am now, still on M Street. But the it's not within my personality. Some people can really do that, can sell themselves. That's not my personality. I've been so nervous about this conversation, and I thought about it, and I said, oh, my goodness. I said, don't forget to say this, and don't forget to say that. And I haven't said any of it.
Oh, tell us, Sylvia, what is it that you wanted to say about, you know,
Oh, I don't know. It's all gone now. It's gone now. I'm going along with what you asked. It's all gone. I was just trying to prepare myself so I wouldn't go, what, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. It's interesting the way you describe that, because for me it's like there's a kind of, you kind of aren't concerned with like expectations, if you know what I mean, like for the end result. And I think some creatives often worry too much about the end result, or worry too much about, you know, where their work will be shown, instead of the actual thing itself. And I think that's really interesting that you kind of, the only expectation you have is to make space to be able to create the art.
That's enough for me. I've understood about me as a person, my limitations. I have only two concerns in life, my children and painting. The rest of it doesn't have too much to do with me. Now I listen to the news, you know, but I mean, it doesn't really have that too much to do with me.
What paint do you use? Is there a certain paint company that you really rely on? Are there certain brushes that you really respond best to?
I'm not here to put up an ad for a particular company. Mm-hmm. So I don't answer that question. I use acrylic. Listen, I tell you this. I'm an oil painter. I am an oil painter. And my kids could not take the odor of turpentine. So, and then when I went to Sydney they could not buy enough oil paint, and I'd have to leave them there too long. They could not import, not buy, but import enough. So I had to learn how to use acrylic. Oil paint, as you know, is from nature. Oil paint is nature. You can work in it, you can work, or you can do everything with oil paint. Acrylic is nothing but plastic. It dries, and it dries like plastic. So for me, I had to learn how to paint with acrylic, because it's just different. I can remember talking to my mother one night, and I said, she asked what was wrong. I said, this painting is drying, and as it dries, it dies. You know, acrylic paint dies when it's not wet. For me, it dies.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, there's like a luscious aliveness in oil paint, isn't there?
Yes. Yes. It is. You see, the other is just plastic. There's no life in that plastic. And the materials, you know, themselves, the materials. And so what I learned to do, what I learned to do, too, with the acrylic, now this is only the use of acrylic, not oil. What I learned with acrylic is that I extended the color areas by incorporating oil pastel on top of the acrylic.
Oh, right.
Now, not in these paintings, that you're not in these paintings in London, not those paintings. But during my time as painting.
And you mentioned the two most important things in your life are your family, like your children now, and then your painting. How do those two things meet? Like, how do your kids react to your paintings? And like, how did you manage to like balance that?
I was painting before they came along. You know, mama and painting go together. They don't know me without painting. They don't, you know, that's what I am. I'm a painter. So that's you know, mom and paint. That's it.
And how do they react to the work? Do they take an interest in it? Do they?
Not really. Not really. I was doing a painting, and I asked my son, I said, Malik, what do you think of this? And he stands back, gives me the stance, and he says, well, Ma, you've done better. Okay. But I knew, but you see, but let me explain. He knew that I was having some feelings about that painting, or I wouldn't have asked that question. Therefore, he took his clue from that, because he knows I really don't care what he thinks about it. You know, but he knew from that that I was having some trepidation about that particular painting. So that's why he was going along with it. So he wasn't that he was standing back and thinking that, you know, he's a judge of what I did, my painting. You know, no, it wasn't that. But he knew that I was really not feeling comfortable with it.
You know, when I look at your work, I feel like they have created a new world somehow, almost like as a viewer, people are able to somehow escape into this other world of your painting. Like, it seems like even though it is very human and very real and very like how we can feel in an interior psychological way, I also just feel a kind of freedom when I look at them, a liberation, and something quite almost like a progressive space. And is escapism or fantasy or creating other worlds, like, you know, like a utopian world or something like that, is that of interest to you within the painting? Or
no, indeed. No. Maybe a long time ago, I used to, philosophy. I do a lot of things about talking about philosophy, you know. And I had a good fit. I mean, this is a long time ago. So listen, are you a painter? Are you a philosopher? He said, you need to make up your mind which one you are. So I stopped it, trying to be a philosopher. You know, I wasn't aware that's what I was doing. Just trying to understand life, you know, trying to put together life and the way it shapes us and how we confront it.
Do you listen to music while you paint, Sylvia?
No. That's one thing my mother could not understand. why don't you listen to music while you paint? Why don't you? I said, I just don't. I don't hear anything. I hear me and the paint. I don't hear anything. Sometimes the television is on. Television stays on in my house 24 hours a day because that needs like background noise. But I don't necessarily hear it. It stays on a CNN or a whatever news channel. But I mean, I zoom out of that. I mean, it's on, but I don't hear it.
Mm. Wow.
That's really interesting. So there's a separation of really philosophy, and then it is all about pure paint and the action of painting, and that as a force in its own right.
Yeah, okay, but it's also, you know, the way I choose to paint has a lot to do with, and I don't know how, and I don't want to go into it because I'm not equipped to, philosophy about life and about living, too. I choose my style of painting. My style of painting was not forced upon me. It's an outgrowth of me, outgrowth of my mental and emotional self.
Mm. Wow.
What a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Well, we have some questions that we ask every single guest that comes on. This has just been so fascinating, Sylvia. Thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Thank you for coming.
Of course. The questions we ask is, the first one is, if you could steal nicely, if you could do an art heist and you could steal any work of art from anywhere in the world for yourself, what would it be and why?
There's not one. I see this whole idea of possession. I don't have that. You know, I don't want to possess art. I don't want to possess somebody's art. I don't, you know, that art is there for other people to see. I don't want to take it and own it. I don't have this ownership, the possession sort of characteristic in my makeup.
Did you ever have other artists asking to, like, swap their paintings for yours?
Yeah, a long time ago, but they don't do that anymore. I mean, a very, very long time ago. And I don't like to do that. There's no, I don't want your painting. I don't want your painting.
Was there ever a point when you remember saying to yourself, I'm an artist, or I'm a painter, and this is my life? Like, was there a realization, or is it just something that flowed?
I think I've always been. Are you asking me when is there a realization? When was there a realization that's what I am?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, but at a very young age. At a very young age. So I didn't, because that's what I always enjoyed doing. I enjoyed it. You know, so I enjoyed it more than anything else. More than playing hopscotch. I enjoyed it.
The other question we ask every guest is, what is your favorite color?
Well, I don't know. The color I use the most is red. Well, red because it's lively. It's alive. You know, it's alive. And people all over the world have some relationship to the color red. There's a reaction to the color red. You know, more so than black, more so than white, more so than anything else. There is a reaction to the color red. And I have that reaction too.
What is the best advice that you've ever received when it comes to your art, Sylvia?
Keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep painting.
Yeah. Was there ever times you had doubts or you felt like you couldn't continue? Or has it always just been, you have to do it? It's like a necessity in order to live.
When my son was killed, I couldn't paint. It took too much out of me. I just for a year, and that's the longest I've ever gone without painting. I just couldn't do it. And why I got back into it after a year, I don't know. Did I really change my painting? No, it did not. I just could not do it. It was just, the pain consumed me, and I couldn't couldn't do paint.
But I mean, I can imagine that's also because your painting is so much, isn't it? You have to give so much. So if you're in grief, I guess it's hard to be able to give in that way.
Yeah. Well, Sylvia, this has been an incredible conversation with you, and I cannot wait to meet you when the exhibition opens. Is the title of the exhibition M Street, or is there another title you're considering?
M Street on White.
M Street on White.
The complete M Street on White, because there are a lot of paintings I've done on M Street. That's the only portion, the only part of the huge series that's all with the white for the negative space. So that's just, you know, M Street on White. Then I know which one you're talking about.
Got it.
Of M Street, but the M Street on White, I know what aspect of the M Street series that comes from.
Amazing. Well, this is, yeah, thank you so much for spending time with us today. We will link show images of things we've been discussing today, and also we will link to Ida Lasanti, which I think has an Instagram, does it, Rob? Do you know?
Yeah, they're at Edel Asante, and you'll be able to visit the exhibition from the 14th of September until the 28th of October 2023. And you can also visit their website, and there's some amazing writing about Sylvia's work. And interestingly, Sylvia's work's been written about in every single decade, pretty much, that she's been making work. But there's an amazing Critics' Choice from 1988, I think, which was written by a writer back then called Alice Thorson. And you can find it online.
Alice Thorson.
Yeah, I think it was called Engaging Expressionism. And I loved that article. Mm-hmm. I thought it was so brilliant. And it's really interesting that a piece of writing from 1988 is still as relevant today. It's like, it's brilliant. So I really recommend that as well. Well, thank you so much for your generosity and your time and your beautiful work. It's, it really stays with us.
I'm really impressed about all the things you know about me. I really am. You really did a lot of homework. And that's good that you're all so very prepared.
Oh, we've got so much respect for your paintings. Yeah, we love your paintings. We truly, like, really connect to them. And this has been such an honor for us. And I really hope we get to meet you in person.
Are you going back to painting now when you get off the phone to us?
No, I can't. I don't bounce back and forth. That's what I was trying to explain to Charlie. Like, he comes and he'll ask me questions, and I have to go to the computer, and I have to think of what is he talking about. And then I can't go back to painting. So I won't paint today. See, I've talked with you, and you'll get out of my system, and I'll paint tomorrow. I can't I have to just do painting that day. I can't fool around with a whole lot of other stuff that takes away from me, takes away from my thinking about painting. You know, I just can't bounce back and forth like that. It's not that kind of thing. I don't bounce. You know, I'm here to stay until I do this. You know, and I can't be interrupted.
Well, thank you so much for giving us your day. It's a real generosity of you. So thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Sylvia, and thank you to everyone for listening. And we will be back very soon.
Thank you. Bye. Okay.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.